The Rules and Administration Committee will come to order. We have two items. We're going to go over the annual Senate audit, and we're going to have an update on the Senate budget. And let's start with an update on the Senate budget. Ms. Zoff.
Mr. Chairman, members, at the last meeting of the Rules Committee, Senator Senjum had asked for a little bit more detail on the Senate budget. We've been getting you the quarterly reports as we go along. But in your packet, you should have a document that said Minnesota Senate summary of all units for the 6 months ending December 31st, 2009. And that's a combination of the two quarterly reports. And then to put that in context, that the first column there will show you the annually budgeted amounts for each of those categories. So you'll get some idea of where the current expenditures, which is the actual YTD in the second column, how that compares with the budgeted amount for the first half of the biennium. I guess you will see that in some instances, I think it's important to understand that there's hopefully going to be less than half of the year's amount spent in the first two quarters because, as you know, there was a hiring freeze in effect and a lot of vacancies occurred and were not filled until the freeze came off in January of this year. So the salary amounts and the benefit amounts should be under 50%. Typically, also, we have more expenditures in the second half of the fiscal year because that is during the legislative session as opposed to the expenditures for the interim. So we have additional costs for temporary employees, and there's additional printing expenditures and additional per diem during the second half of the year. Just by way of background, we have, in order to accomplish the reduced expenditures to meet the reduction in our budget, and I should point out that between the previous biennium's budget and this year's budgeted amount for the Senate, there was a statutory reduction of 4.66%. That doesn't take into account the fact that we did have two payments from the Senate budget of the previous biennium that were essentially the equivalent of unallotments that were returned, money that wasn't used. So we have seen a very significant cost in the amount or reduction in the amount that's available to the Senate. During the period of that's covered by this budget for the first half of the year, from the end of June through the end of December, there were 16 positions that opened up at various points in that time period, and they were left unfilled until the first of the year. So that accounts for a lot of savings in the budget. We also had about $70,000 in salary savings from people who took time off during the interim in an unpaid position. A number of these positions have been permanently eliminated. As you know, the publications department was eliminated and the word processing department. And those duties, some of them won't be continued, but some of them have been redistributed to other offices in the nonpartisan branch. Some of the CIS people have picked up some of those duties, and some of the secretaries in Senate Council Research and Fiscal Analysis have picked up some of the duties that were previously performed by those people who have left. We also had people filling in for those who had left in the senator's offices. So a lot of people have done some double duty during this period, and that has resulted in, you know, very helpful savings to the Senate. The regular employee headcount between 2007 and 2010 has decreased from 217 to 203. So that is a helpful move for the budget as well. I would just like to point out that the savings that we've accomplished in this budget, in addition to the salary savings that we've talked about here, a number of things were done the maintenance agreements, which are essentially in the nature of long-term warranties for equipment and for processes that we used. We have opted to go for very inexpensive options to the extent we can. Some of that's because when we had the one-time technology money a couple of years ago, we bought new equipment, and we felt that we could get by with less expensive maintenance agreements at this period. But as that equipment ages, we may need to, you know, get the more expensive maintenance agreements or face the reality that some of that equipment is not going to be functioning anymore and will need to be replaced. But I should point out that this budget for this current biennium has been premised on having very little purchases of equipment. And the reality is that that's not going to be able to continue indefinitely. We're looking at a two-year period that's, you know, a real austerity budget. No salary increases, no promotions for the staff for the two-year period. Very little replacement of equipment, keeping all of our other expenses to a bare minimum. Those are the kinds of things that we figured we could do for 2 years, but going forward it's going to be very tough to maintain that. One of the other significant savings that we had this year is that we replaced the service provider that's used for the computer programs that help the Human Resources and Fiscal Services Office. And we are saving probably $200,000 a year because of going to that new system. So I think a lot of credit goes to the people in the fiscal office and Mr. Boomhauer and Tom Klein and the other people in CIS for helping us to save a substantial amount of money going forward there. If you have any questions, I can answer
questions?
Them or come back.
Questions? Senator Senjum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to mentally trend this. The first 6 months being we're not in session, and I don't know how the cost will increase as we now are in session and per diems and everything that goes along with that. But we have two sessions left of this biennium. If you just try to mentally trim this, can we make it within $44 million, do you think?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, that's certainly my hope. Obviously, it's very, very hard to predict what the future is going to be in terms of, you know, salaries and benefits are by far the biggest part of the Senate budget. I think we will realize additional savings, not just because we have lost some positions or we've chosen not to fill some positions, but, you know, I think it's safe to say that maybe during this first half of the first year of the biennium, given the fact that we did terminate some people and a number of people who have been here for quite some time have chosen to leave as well, one of the things that skews this salary number up a little bit is that we had some payouts. When people leave, they may have accumulated vacation and sick leave and that sort of thing. So when you lose people who've been here for a long time, that will bump that number up a little bit. So, you know, that most of that should have been taken care of in this line. You know, we're going to be, we really do monitor this very closely and are hoping that we're going to be able to make it.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
On your last point about long-term employees leaving, now this is an election year. Senators retire, don't come back. Sometimes we have a turnover of staff, too, where sometimes long-term staff. Are we prepared to handle that potential of employees leaving?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fredrickson, do you mean in terms of the payout of that?
Yes, the payout.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, yes, we will keep an eye on that. And I guess the point would be that if those people who had the relatively high salaries are leaving, say, at the end of this year, if their members are not running or are not coming back, we'd have the payouts then. But then assuming that we would replace those people with less experienced people, the salaries would be down for the next period.
It's usually a net reduction, isn't it? Or not necessarily?
Mr. Chair, it's kind of hard to say. I think that would be on a real case-by-case basis. If you lose an employee who is very highly compensated and they have their 275 hours of vacation time that they can take with them, and you know, some of them have a substantial amount of money that they can put into a health savings account if they've been here for a long time, that's a lot of money. And, you know, presumably you're going to be bringing someone in at a lower salary, but it'll depend on at what point in time that happens. There's a lot of variables.
I would think we're going to have to ask members, if someone does leave after session, we're going to ask members not to hire somebody again like we did last year. I presume we're going to have some semblance of a hiring freeze on this summer also. No decisions have been made on that, but it just seems to make sense. If you know, we'll be doing all of those types of things. I think what I was going to ask is, Ms. Zoff, I think there's a recommendation in the governor's budget for a certain level of reduction in the Senate budget, and I think I'd like to work up a scenario or two for us so we could look at that. Looks like the governor was a little heavier in his reductions in the Senate budget than in his own budget.
No.
Just wanted to point that out. My guess is that probably is not what it's going to look like at the end. And so when you're told that somebody's picking on the governor's budget, you might want to notice that they're starting from a much lower base than what he suggested. I believe that was a mistake by the governor to do that. I just can't imagine he would do that.
Mr. Chair, what did you mean by starting from a much lower base? Explain that a little bit to me.
If you look at the numbers that the governor has in his budget for cuts to the legislature relative to his operation, you'll see what I mean. He apparently can't make cuts in his own operation. We will be. Senator Burgoyne.
Mr. Chairman, I also believe he still has quite a bit of staff that's not carried in his own budget.
We'll be working on that also. So, Ms. Zoff, if you would put together a scenario two that we could look at based on the governor's number, let's see if that makes sense for the democracy. Senator Senjum. Senator Metzen.
Well, I just observed that, you know, going from 2007 to 2010, it seems like we are passing this way. It's 14 less employees, and you multiply that times the salaries and the benefits, it seems to me that's about $800,000 already that we're pretty good around in the Senate's budget. So we are... I don't know, not leading the way is not the right way to put it, but we are responsible, and that's a lot of money. 14 employees times 50, 60,000 with benefits is 850 grand or so. It's an observation.
And I just want to point out the Senate was willing to make deeper cuts in the Senate budget last year than either the House or the governor were willing to make in their own budgets. So I just, I would hope members of the Senate would not get carried away with thoughtful suggestions on the Senate floor, because sometimes things come to fruition. We were asked to cut the postage budget, and we did. If we're asked to cut the Senate staff further, we will. Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Stoff, I saw a different way to ask my same question. Just, you know, looking at the $10 million through the first two quarters and extrapolating, that's $5 million a quarter, and a biennium being eight quarters. I mean, if you just took our off session expenses, it would be $40 million. I'm just thinking that when senators are here and we're in session, we're burning paper and we're doing per diem and we're we're doing interns, and I'm not complaining. I'm just trying to think of it from the standpoint of reality. You really think we can make this work, or is it going to be very close?
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, I suspect it will be very close. You know, and I've discussed this with Mr. Greenwald, who's had more experience in doing the Senate budget over the years, and he has told me that actually the difference between the interim budget and the session budget is not as great as you might think. That we do have additional costs for temporary employees. We do have some additional per diem and some additional printing and paper and that sort of thing. But he seemed to think there wouldn't be a tremendous difference. But it's certainly something that we'll keep an eye on as we get this year's experience, where we are going to be very close to the numbers at best. We'll just have to keep a very close eye on that. And, you know, we're really doing everything we can to keep costs down as we go forward. And if anybody has any more ideas as we go, we're very receptive. If there are things where you see any waste or duplication or anything like that, don't hesitate to let me know, because we do pay very close attention to what's going on every month. And, you know, we're going to need just to be vigilant, and we're going to need some good luck, frankly, or an absence of bad luck as we go forward, because we are going to be very close.
I want to point out, too, that we eliminated the highest paid position in the Senate and asked two long-term employees to take those responsibilities without any increased compensation. So it's not, you know, at some level, we've eliminated two departments. We've asked members not to hire staff until the last minute here. So we're doing a lot of things that are necessary. We changed the FO system. We changed the payroll system. There may be other things, and we're absolutely willing to do those things or consider them. But at some level, you got to start to wonder, does it make sense? So, but I'm absolutely, there obviously are areas we can still tighten up. Let's find those areas, but let's do it in a way that makes sense for the institution. Because we are temporary tenants here, all of us. And I don't think we want to do something to the institution that does damage. So, anything else on this? Okay, Ms. Zoff, thank you much. Senator Fredrickson, you're going to introduce our audit.
Mr.
Murray's here, so.
Ask Mr. Murray to come to the table and present his audit to us.
Very good. Mr. Murray, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm Jim Murray with Baker Tilly, Burchard Prowse. I'm a partner with the firm and oversee your audit and have done so for a number of years now. And would you like the presentation as we've done in the past to go over the management letter first?
I think so, yes.
Okay. The management letter is the letter that's written that kind of summarizes the results of the audit and points out any problem areas or deficiencies. And first page of that, down towards the bottom, points out material weakness, significant deficiency, which is the same comment you've had the last few years, and it's due to the fact of the accounting standards changing a few years ago. And we prepare the financial statements for you, and we make some journal entries at the end of the year to bring your cash basis books to the modified accrual basis. So when we're doing that, the new standards say we have to point that out as a weakness, so it's no reflection on your staff at all. moving on to what's labeled page one, it talks about the material weakness, internal control over financial reporting, and just describes just what I have said to you, the that we are preparing the financial statements for you. And I mean, going down the in the future, just with what you were talking about with your budget, I mean, it's very hard for people to have the resources to hire additional staff to be able to accomplish some of these duties. So the majority of the governmental audits that we issue, and I'm responsible for about 50 of them, cities and towns and things, they all have the same comment because they're not able to hire staff to have CPAs on board and that type of thing. So it is not unusual. The next comment, a two-way communication regarding your audit. This has been in here the last couple of years now, too, with the new audit standards. We have to put in writing now and inform you that if you ever have any suspicions of anything within your agency that you'd like us to take a better look at when we're doing the audit, because an audit, as you know, we're not looking at every single transaction. We're pulling tests and things and pulling samples. So as part of planning the audit, we do ask, as a part of that planning process, if there's any areas you want us to focus on. And one of the common themes ever since I've been involved with the audit is looking at phone bills, and we have a comment in there. I mean, that's not a typical audit step, but it's something that had been a problem many years ago, and we continue to look at those things to make sure there's compliance, and I'll cover that point in a second. Moving on to page 3, up on the top, GASB statement number 54, fund balance reporting. This will be a new standard that will be in effect for years ending June 30th, 2011 and beyond. And all it will do is change the title of the equity section within a governmental statement. For the Senate, it's really not going to have much of a difference. Rather than reserve fund balance, it'll either be non-spendable or restricted. So it's just a change in terms. And really what it's getting at is more at the city level and the county level and things. They wanted more standardized reporting of how that equity is being reported and, in essence, the spendability of that, your equity balance. Then moving on to the prior year comments. Last year we talked about the physical security of the fiscal services office. And this year, staff said they were locking the door when no staff are present, so you've corrected that. There's an organizational chart that had been developed this last year, so that comment will go away. And then the Senate phone bills, there's a comment there that we pulled 10 phone bills to test, and all of them were either properly approved or had no long-distance charges. And again, that's under direction of management that we're performing that test.
I'm just going back to previous, the organizational chart. I wouldn't mind seeing it. Have I seen it?
Mr. Chair, I don't know. Mr. Binhart was working on that. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, when, I think we'd like to see it in the Rules Committee at some point. Okay. Thanks. Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I had a staff member raise the issue on the phone bill issue as to what does that cost, the whole exercise of those forms coming out, and I don't know if everybody is responding to them or not, but is there any better way to do that more efficiently than the way it's now being handled? I mean, you know, there was...
Yeah, I know.
That was an issue that is, I mean, I think is almost gone by the wayside.
Until it comes up again. Until it comes up again.
But is this the process?
What is the process?
That prevents it from happening again?
Is there a less expensive way to do it? What, who can tell us what the process is on that now? And is there a less expensive way to do it? We get these copies of our phone bills and we sign them, right?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. This is Marita Gould, who works with the phone system. Apparently, these chiefs of printouts of the long-distance calls that were made on each of the Senate phones, and then she distributes them to the people or the offices to which those phones are assigned, and we're expected to sign off on the long-distance calls that came from our number and return them. I don't know if there's a way to do that.
Mr. Chair, what part of a staff member does it take to do that one process every single month?
All I know is that there's a current Republican, a minority staff member, asking for all kinds of records on phones that our staff, that the professional staff is trying to get to them. So somebody seems to be interested. Does Mr. Cocking still work for you? Okay, so maybe it's not even an internal member of the Senate anymore. But I just got an email where he's asking for more records, so they're providing whatever they can provide. It does cost staff work to do it, but, you know, they're open records, they're public records, and...
The approval is, I think it's the important thing has been that it's
the senator themselves that takes responsibility for signing off on their own phone records rather than some nonpartisan staff or, you know, some staff person who really has no knowledge to know what those records mean. So while it probably does take some time, I think it's a really important check and balance that the senator themselves take responsibility for their own phone records rather than someone else.
Mr. Chair, it just had been raised by a legislative assistant, and I just
point out. I think the thing to do is point out to that person that the individual senator is responsible for the use of their own phone, and if there is a misuse, it will be directly back to that senator. There's no central response other than providing the information. An individual senator who improperly uses either their phone on the Senate floor or their phone in their office will be held responsible because they have to sign off on it.
So, Mr. Chair, I don't know that who gets the those papers on the floor phone. I don't think I've ever. Maybe it's, we're sharing that, so maybe the other senator gets that.
I don't know. All I know is that there has been a request for the information of the use of the Senate floor phones. Mm-hmm. So I would hope that nobody has misused them. I haven't misused mine. Senator Frederickson?
Mr. Chairman, I was thinking through Senator Olson's question if there's a cheaper way to do it or a less expensive way. And I was thinking, well, maybe we could do it quarterly or a longer period of time. But then I sort of my mind contradicted that, too, because what if somebody does go into our office and if some of our offices are unlocked, staff phones are unlocked, and comes in the middle of the night and starts running up phone bills of tens of thousands of dollars like we had when this was an issue a few years ago? Then that would not catch that in a timely way. So I don't know if there is a better way to do it than monthly. The exposure is there. I guess what I'm saying, the exposure is there for misuse of the phones, if not by members of staff, by outsiders that come into the buildings at night, or could come into the buildings at night.
Senator Sengel?
You know, as I look at that sheet, and it's difficult, you get it's several pages. On a personal basis, I make most of my phone calls on this. I just happen to have unlimited minutes, and that's just habit. But you know, without it seems to me there's a sheet, there's a date, there's a number, maybe there's a time. But you look at those numbers, and except for area codes, you have no idea. I just hope most of mine are 507, but it would be even hard, I think, for any of us to be able to backtrack and think about, well, on a certain date 2 weeks ago to make a call. I don't know. It is difficult. I understand we have a responsibility. It's difficult.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sandra, what I do is look at the where the call ended, you know, where the call went to. I look to see if they're in my district, and if they're way outside my district or to another state, try to go back and say, okay, what were we talking about? Why did we call? Lexington, Kentucky. Oh, yeah, right. That's the head of the Council of State Governments. You know.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Murray.
Okay. The last comment there on page 4, the entering of payroll data, and we had commented that there really should be a second person looking at when that payroll data has been entered to make sure it's been entered correctly. And this past year, there were periodic checks on the payroll system to make sure that was occurring. And with, you know, your hiring freezes and things, the staff was saying they didn't know if they'd have the people available to continue to do that. But we'd encourage you, you know, as you have available time, if it can't be every payroll or every quarter, you know, periodically through the year, someone should be just double-checking that. So, and as you notice, we didn't have any new comments this year, so you've taken care of all these things. The balance of the report, the communication, required communication, these are standard items we have to point out to you, our responsibility under generally accepted auditing standards and government audit standards, the plan, scope, and timing of the audit, nothing caused us to change our scopes. Everything we looked at was in accordance with your rules and things. Significant accounting policies, they're described in Note 1 to your financial statements, and there are no new accounting standards that went into effect this year. Accounting estimates really don't apply to you. You don't own your own equipment. That's at the state level, so there's no depreciation or anything like that. Your financial statement disclosures are neutral, consistent, and clear. We didn't have any difficulties in performing the audit. And audit adjustments, as I mentioned, the one comment that we have, page 6, we lay out the adjustments that we had, the recording the accrued payroll and reversing the prior year's accrued payroll, and then setting up some accounts payable. And again, that's just converting your cash-based statement to a modified accrual, so it's not unusual. If you remember last year, there was what's called a past adjustment that's underneath a materiality level, or it's small, that it really doesn't make your statements misleading. But there was some video equipment that was run through the prior year when you really hadn't taken delivery until the current year. That's the $31,621 and the $21,000. So that'll go away next year. It was just it overlapped the 2 years. We didn't have any disagreements with management. There weren't any other independent accountants consulted. And the management representation letter is attached to the back of this, and that's the, with the new standards, that's been required to be attached now the last couple of years, just showing the staff that they're saying they've given us all the records, you're not hiding anything from us, and that type of thing. We have to have a comment on independence, and we have to point out there that we do prepare the statements and help you with the journal entries and help from your trial balance. We format the data to put it into the financial statement. And we didn't have any other audit findings or issues other than what we've talked about. So I mean, it was a very clean audit this year, and the staff made an effort to correct the areas that we commented on last year, so it was very good to see.
Sarah Olson.
Mr. Chair, this shows my ignorance of some of these processes, but in preparing that the annual financial statements, how much of that can be done electronically, or do we have software for doing that, or is that a labor-intensive? You mentioned about we don't have the specialized staff mm-hmm. that are trained to do it. Are there ways of doing that short of having specialized staff?
They've switched to a different accounting program this year, Great Plains now. So I believe, I don't know if you have the financial reporting module with that, but there are reporting modules that you can get with the accounting system that you map your accounts to the individual accounts to how you want them to print on your statement. And then if it's grouped appropriately, it should be just a matter of running that report, and those numbers would go right into the financial statement. So there could be some savings there, which then would decrease the amount of time that we take in doing the audit and preparing your statements and things.
So
apparently we do not have that module. Who wants to talk about that a little bit? Can somebody tell us why we don't have that module? Join us, please, at the table.
Mr. Chairman, members, Eileen Lunzer, Fiscal Services. We are on our new system. It's a Great Plains system with our Lawson system. We really weren't in tune with the general ledger and a lot of the reporting that goes along with it. It just wasn't something that we were trained with. But with the Great Plains system, we're really able to get real intricate reports out of this, and we're still learning process. But most definitely, I think it'll be very helpful when our new auditors come in. We'll have more of a detail with this new system.
But, Mr. Chair, does it have the module that helps prepare the annual report then?
I believe so, Senator. I think we can do just about anything with this new one. We're just, like I said, still learning, but it is, it's kind of exciting, always exciting when the numbers match.
Even with your trial balance, if you get a group,
absolutely,
to how they lay out in the report, I mean, that saves time right there.
I'm getting, Senator Olson, I'm getting Mr. Greenwald. You don't please join us at the front. We may not have that specific module, but the data apparently is much deeper than it has been in the past. But
yes.
Let's see what we...
Mr. Chair, Jim Greenwald, Director of SIS. In purchase of the modules we got, we don't have the particular one that does that financial statements. We do have some additional reporting features which can gather the information differently than when we did with the Lawson system. The Lawson system, we did not utilize the general ledger. And with the Great Plains system, we are using the general ledger so that we are gathering data that can probably be used either by someone who's familiar with how to put together the statement or the auditor who would do that. We do not have the module that specifically does that. Probably, I'm not sure, those modules are running several thousand dollars probably. The advantage that we have is that we have utilized a trained CPA firm to both put that together, but then also confirm that those are done correctly, because we do not have the trained CPAs in our offices.
Why don't it seems, Senator Olson, maybe we should just make sure that while Mr. Murray's with us, why don't you guys talk with him and see if it would make sense to expend money on that module or whether it doesn't make sense to expend money on it. Why don't you have that discussion?
Because, Mr. Chair, obviously there's a cost to the way we're doing it now.
Correct.
Is that, how does that compare, and to what extent would that, I mean, we're in the cost savings mode, would we be able to achieve a savings there or not?
We may be able to. One thing that we have done is we've reduced our audits to every other year on our budget so that we will be making some savings there. When we bid the audit out the next time, we can look and see what the alternate would be as to having the firm do the balance statements or not.
And let me just comment, but as long as the trial balance, you have that feature, if you set up the grouping to provide the detail that you need to go into the report, I mean, that's going to save time right there. Because then we don't have to do that. It may not make sense to buy the whole module because that is meant to have your notes, I'm sure, to the financial statements in there, and you'd be looking at to us to do that anyway. So I think, myself, I would start with the general ledger that you have and do the grouping and see how that goes as far as cutting time down for the audit would be my recommendation.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Olson, any other questions there? Okay, do we need a motion to accept the audit? Or any other questions, Senator?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we acknowledge receipt of the audit for year 2008 and 2009.
Is that the appropriate motion? Okay, and if I could just ask, what is the cost of the audit? How much did we pay for an audit?
I don't recall.
$21,000.
Okay. Thank you. So on the Frederickson motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Members, we are going to have to make some reductions probably in the budget cycle. So I thought the first step would be to have Ms. Zoff show us kind of what it would look like under the governor's rec. And then I know some members are interested in participating in this, so I was intending to have some discussion here about what you thought made sense. And the experience in the past, I have talked to former majority leaders about this, and the experience in the past is that people, and I've just met this as an observation, that people seem to be wanting interested in doing it, and then as you talk about it, they kind of say, well, why don't you go off and do it, Mr. Majority Leader? But I'm perfectly willing to try to proceed a little bit here and see if we can have some suggestions and ideas. And I tell you, Ms. Zoff and Ms. Helgen are looking for ideas. They are frankly not as enthusiastic about the cuts as I might be. They tell me that I don't totally understand the depth of what I'm talking about when I say we have to make some of these cuts. So I think we're going to need to pay some serious attention here.
Chairman, when you say that we will do this, are you saying it within the Rules Committee, or are you saying doing it right now?
Not right this second.
Okay.
No, not right this second. I just assume in the budget process,
yeah. Okay.
The Senate will have to make additional reductions.
Mm-hmm.
I just, frankly, Ms. Zoff and Ms. Helgen have told me that they're not quite sure where we're going to do that. But we're going to have to work together and see if we can't find some additional savings.
Mr. Chairman, could we give that some thought and perhaps discuss it at another meeting? Or?
Oh, absolutely. No, this is just, I'm
you're just putting it on. You don't, yes, you're not looking for...
No, not right now. No, I'm looking for suggestions in the next month or two. I mean, or I don't know what kind of time frame Senator Cohen's committee's on, but Senator Bedsole will come to us and say, okay, what's the number? And we're going to need to be prepared to help him. And I'm absolutely willing to have members of the Rules Committee participate in that.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
You know, $20 million of the $22 million is salaries and benefits. I mean, you can cut the stamps and you can cut the video and you can cut everything. And, I think everybody knows that, but I just want to point that out, that 19.5 to 20 million of the 22 is salaries and benefits, and benefits pretty much set, you know, health care and salaries, we're not raising those, so I don't know. So
what is the number in the governor's recommendation, Ms. Zoff?
Offer cut salaries. Yeah.
I think, Mr. Chairman, the governor had suggested, I guess, three components to the change to the Senate budget. And one was a reduction of 3%, I think it was referred to as 3% of the unspent funds in fiscal year 2010. So that's this year's budget that we're halfway through. I'm not quite clear what was intended by referring to unspent funds. I'm not sure what that was intended to mean or how we would even compute that. And then by 6% for fiscal 2011, and then also a 6% reduction in the carry forward.
Do you have the calculation of what those numbers are?
Yeah, Mr. Greenwald had prepared that it would be, for fiscal 10, a reduction of $317,000. For fiscal 11, $1.3 million. And then the carry forward was going to be $126,000.
So the base cut needs to be one. The governor's recommendation is a base cut of $1.3 million.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the 1.3 is the fiscal 11. That's the 6%. And he had broken it into these three different components. It wasn't 6% of the total Senate budget, but it was 3% of the unspent funds for 10, the year that we're halfway through. And to me, that's a little speculative. I'm not quite sure exactly how do you determine that amount. But then 6% of the 11 appropriation is $1.3 million. And that's just that one component.
What was the total number for the legislature? I guess that's the number I saw. $6 million is what's sticking in my head. Is that right or not?
The total number for the legislature is about $6 million for 10 and 11.
So that includes the organizations between the House and the Senate, too.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, those numbers on this year on the third quarter, they January 1st balances. So as the Senate continues to expend money before we make a decision, those balances will be less, and the percentages then will make the real amounts less. So that calculation is based on what was remaining in the third board on February 1st and what was remaining in the Senate's budget.
So for a full biennium, I'm looking at the governor's numbers here. For the full biennium, it's an $8 million reduction, 12 and 13, for the legislature.
Right. He's requesting a reduction of, I think it's $4,056,000. What that would be for the Senate, means for the Senate, is a reduction in the next biennium, 12 and 13, of $2,672,000.
Per year.
From the existing.
Yeah. Per year?
No.
Per biennium? Okay.
What was that number again? $1,672,000.
$672,000?
Yes. $1,336,000 per year, which is the amount requested that we reduce it fiscal 2011. So if we're looking at how to make these cuts, if that were the cut we were to take, we would have to find $1,003,000.
Okay. So, and as well, Senator Berglund, you wanted to say something?
Well, the suggestion that I had to make was that perhaps going out into the future, we could look at some of the committees are not as busy as other committees, and maybe some of the ones that aren't as busy could share staff more than they do now. Maybe to look at, maybe.
Senator Cohen?
I've got my bill to reduce the size of the legislature to 90 reps and 45 senators. That would save a lot of money.
Not that much.
Can we pick the senators?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Cohen, you may know that I'm not disinterested in that bill.
Well, introduce the
That may be a little dramatic, the reduction, but I...
Mr. Chairman? Maybe you want to go on co-author the one. Mine isn't quite as radical, but I did introduce one as well that that reduces the Senate by 11, 22 in the House, and makes it the boundaries coterminous with our congressional district boundaries, and it'll work with either 8 or 7.
Mr. Chairman, on a $34 billion budget, that's going to really save the state.
Well.
That's the silliest thing I've ever heard.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's
I was young and did the same legislation 25 years ago. Rah rah rah! But I've since changed my mind, as you can tell.
You are
silliest thing in the world.
You offered a bill.
I want to represent 200,000 people instead of 85,000.
Senator Cohen,
Mr. Chairman, I actually introduced the bill that was in the House.
So did.
When I came over to the Senate, I learned, particularly from my greater Minnesota colleagues, that was really an unpopular idea because of the geographic size of the district.
You go from Canada down to St. Cloud pretty soon.
But we are going to do a lot of unpopular things this year, aren't we? Senator Frederickson?
I would just like to make an observation on page 13 of our audit. On the 2009 salaries for senators is $2,100,000 out of a total budget of total salaries and benefits of about $20 million. And so the expense of having senators serve here is not a significant portion of the budget.
Yeah. Then you do that, you can hire more staff though too. So when you get cut the legislature.